Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here it is, 11:24. We're heading toward Thanksgiving and rounding out the month of November.
Yep, it's an early, shortened week, I should say, for markets this week. We're going to see that the markets in the U.S. are closed on Thanksgiving. We'll see a half day on Friday, which probably means a half to a three-quarter day on Wednesday, because people are getting ready to get out there and do their thing. Little known fact, or maybe at least I think it's a little known fact. Do you know that, as far as I know, Chinese restaurants are closed one day of the year? You know what that day is?
I've never heard this.
Yeah, I'm telling you. Go to a Chinese restaurant and ask.
You're making the claim that the Chinese restaurants are all closed on Thanksgiving, but they're always open on Christmas.
Yeah. It makes total sense.
Well, how does it make sense?
Well, if there's any day of the year that every religion and every person is in the U.S. is celebrating something probably at home and eating something at home, it's Thanksgiving. And it's probably something that's not Chinese food. I mean, it's turkey, for goodness sakes, and all the other stuff. Whereas on Christmas or Easter or, you know, what, pick your poison. Well, Christmas and Easter, the Jews are going to the Chinese restaurants. And if you have Rosh Hashanah or something like that, well, the Jews may still go to the Chinese restaurants, but probably not. You know, they say Chinese food is Jewish soul food.
I don't know if you know. Yeah, that dates back to the days of Abraham, I think.
Abraham and Chin. And so, for whatever reason, go to your Chinese restaurant and ask him. I ask all the listeners to make a quick call tomorrow and ask him if they're open on Thanksgiving. They'll probably say no. And also, what other days during the year do they close? They'll say probably none. I'm telling you.
That's could be.
Little known facts. As a matter of fact, on this week's Disciplined Investor podcast, I was talking about some of the big changes that happen over time. You know, the changes that happen that are sweeping. For example, I mentioned, well, we went from phones in the house to cell phones, and a lot of people got rid of their phones. But one of the things that also did was disrupt the entire payphone industry. And I said, you know, I don't know if all my listeners know what a payphone is.
So yeah, the payphone, finding a payphone nowadays would be like pulling teeth.
And people would be like, where do you put the credit card?
Yeah.
I mean, in the old days you'd go out, you always had either it was a dime or a quarter in your pocket. I remember a dime.
I think it originally started off as a nickel.
Yeah.
Then they went to a dime, they went to a quarter, and now you can't find them.
Non-existent. Yep. Well, there's plenty of global unrest. I don't know if you've been watching what's going on. We saw that there was and still seems to be, a total shutdown of Brussels. Never knew that Brussels was such a hot spot for terrorism.
Well, I don't know that it is, but I think it would be quite inconvenient to be a tourist stuck in Brussels.
Yeah. Shutdown. U.S. State Department is issuing a global travel warning for U.S. citizens through February 2016.
Yeah.
Turkey.
What does it say exactly?
It's just a warning. And I guess now that I've seen this before during these holidays where they do this and they put extra police on, more, I guess, for, you know, greater scrutiny.
For more overtime.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Maybe. Greater scrutiny on travelers. Turkey downs a Russian fighter plane. That was a big oops.
Yep.
That's probably not one of the wisest things. Although it seemed they did try to warn the guy. And for whatever reason, he had the iPod on too loud or something. Couldn't hear the thing coming over the commands. But he did get out. He's safe, right? He's fine. He parachuted
out. Who, the pilots?
Yeah, he parachuted out.
There were two pilots. It's one of those jets that's got two pilots. And they parachuted out and got killed by the guys down below.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, as far as I know.
Oh, I didn't know that part. Well, that's bad.
Yeah, Turkmen or something. Some sort of another one of those communities. And I guess the Russians were bombing them, and so they got a hold of the guys, and they shot them both killed them.
Not good. So Russia's going to have to posture and do something.
Well, I mean, the way I was going, apparently, I don't know. Nobody knows. But it sounds as though the Russians were violating the airspace constantly because they're taking these big looping rounds. You know, these jets, they go so fast, they can't really just turn on a dime. And come around. They keep going over the airspace, and they get supposedly warned it over and over and over again. And so one of them shot one of them down, and the Russians all bent out of shape, claiming they didn't go over the airspace, and this will take forever. Then the pilots, I guess, are dead.
Bad. Now, with all this global unrest, you would think, well, markets could be under pressure, right? I mean, you would think. All this going on, we have...
Yeah, you'd expect a market plunge.
Yeah. If it wasn't for the Paris situation, if it wasn't for maybe some of the global travel warnings and in response to the Brussels shutdown, and then this, you know, there was something, markets would get a kink. Now, what happened today was that markets did start down about, pre-market, about 110 points. There were some numbers out that also didn't help in terms of economics. And I tweeted early this morning, I said, if the Paris terrorist acts could spark a 1.5% rally, we should be able to see about a 0.75% from a downing of a Russian fighter plane. And lo and behold, by the end of the day, small caps were up about 0.5% or so. But from the bottom to the top, it was about 0.5% that the markets moved up into it and closed the day higher slightly on the Dow Jones and the NASDAQ, I believe. And
all up a little.
So no concerns. Even with consumer confidence dropping to a significant low over the last, as compared to the last several months, it was 99 in October, dropped to 90.4 in November. GDP was revised to 2.1%, which was, good. That's right in line with what expectations were. But I guess the big thing that did get hit today was something that's been getting a little bit nudged around recently, which is the companies that are in the stocks that are related to travel, leisure, vacations. So you have like Priceline, which missed on the earnings, but that got knocked down pretty good today. Expedia, another one of those. There's a few of these. Airline stocks were hit. The airlines ETF is symbol JETS. Cruise lines. I'm always amazed that we have all these different types of terrorist acts that go on. You get, on a plane, maybe somebody, brings something on and does something, or a suicide bomber. Nothing happens on cruise lines, which seems to be the least protected of them all.
Well, that's not true.
What have we seen?
Nothing recently, but remember the one cruise line was overtaken by terrorists and they were throwing people over the side. And
wasn't that pirates? Same thing?
No, there was a cruise line terrorist incident. It was 20 years ago. But it has happened.
But you don't see like, how hard would it be to smuggle a bomb in somehow?
I don't know.
It seems a little bit.
It doesn't look like it'd be that difficult.
Right, exactly. And just, put it somewhere, take a little walk downstairs and stand against the wall in the crew the crew area, a couple floors below the waterline, and boom, you're in the middle of the ocean. I don't know. It just seems to me that that would. I hope this never happens, but it would seem to me that there would be something on a cruise line. The security is not as great as it is in other places, like airports. Yeah, anyway. So Carnival Cruise Line, symbol CCL, and Royal Caribbean, RCL, were also knocked down a little bit today on some of this because I guess people are getting a little antsy on the potential for traveling. You think it's going to affect anything really significantly?
Personally, no.
No. I mean, there are all those people that had plans to go to Paris that would be like, maybe not. I'll maybe go over to... I think
now's the time to go. It's going to be safer than ever.
Yeah. And probably...
safest time right after an incident.
And probably not as many tourists.
Right. It's less tourists. They'd be happy to see you. It'd be super safe because of all the police and extra guards out there. And you have the place to yourself. It's just beyond me that people don't think like that.
Well, I don't know if the French will be happy to see you.
Now, Belgium, again, that's be a different story because they won't let you leave your hotel, but that's different.
Yeah. We'll see if Paris actually is happy to see anybody. They're never, French are not the most gracious to the people from the United States. At least they weren't to me.
Well, you weren't acting right.
I wasn't. I asked for the mustard. They pretend they had no idea. I'm like, listen, I didn't ask for ketchup. I asked mustard, which is like,
you know, tart.
Yeah, that's what I said. I think they thought I was calling him a name.
Huh.
We'll see. So Facebook has something interesting that happened. But watch, the Facebook hit an all-time high a couple of days ago.
Yeah, I know.
So it seems that they have this new program or app or process, procedure to make it easier on those that have relationships that they post on Facebook to break up.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, it's horrifying for somebody to take down their status to single or something like that, or to see that the other party that you broke up with is having just a jolly time now with their new gal or guy, you know, laughing it up at all sorts of bars with their pictures and all this good stuff. And God forbid they post a new status update that they are now in a relationship with, you know, John or Jane. And so now there seems that Facebook is letting these people kind of take a break. They're saying that after changing the status of a relationship with another person, they'd let them see less of an ex-girlfriend or wife or whatever, or husband's posts without blocking or unfriending them. So it kind of just filters, it seems. I'm not sure what they're exactly filtering, but they're filtering. And you could also actually go into Facebook now and, you know, show less ex information. You could do something in there. What do you think of that from the surface? Any comments?
Well, we had a dinner conversation with myself, my millennial son, and his millennial wife.
Oh.
And the thesis is that Facebook is actually encouraging this sort of thing. They're encouraging people to break up and be jealous of somebody else's phony baloney posts and all the rest of it because it creates churn.
Oh, interesting. So you think this is all to create more page views?
Yeah.
Which then creates more advertising prints.
Right.
Which creates more revenue.
Yeah, they don't care about people. And I mean, they don't care about you, and you're making your life miserable by breaking up, and it's just completely out of control.
So this is kind of their way of creating like a Real Housewives of New Jersey kind of situation by poking and stoking the fire.
Yeah.
Mm. I had a different tact.
Okay.
I also thought it was potentially done for Facebook's benefit, but from a different area. I thought that now it would make it easier for people to put this take a break thing or whatever it is, and you check that box or whatever it is that you do, right? Now that then brands you as someone who has recently ended a relationship, right? That,
yep.
That then has more another square check on the marketing checkbook of, oh, this is a marketing target for someone.
Oh, for targeting.
Yeah, target marketing. Then they could sell things like, or put advertisements for maybe wine for somebody who, you know, is upset and they want to kind of just get
they want to get drunk.
Yeah, vacations, other dating sites, chocolates.
Yeah.
Antidepressants. What do you think? Right?
Yeah, I think that's a valid observation. Yeah, no doubt about it.
So I told my kids about that. Like, what? I think you're getting a little bit too like crazy with this. It's just a freaking thing we could just check off. I'm like, well, it seems to me that while Facebook may be trying to be altruistic and you see it as just, oh, that's a nice little feature, there's always something behind it. And the probability is that
it's a money making operation for a reason.
Right, exactly. Kind of interesting.
Well, you know, like I said, I'm not on Facebook. I have a couple of phony Facebook accounts that people put up. They're not me. And I don't use it. I find it to be annoying.
I find the whole thing about someone putting up a phony account hysterical. The whole thing is just unbelievable. And how about those people that put Facebook accounts up for their dogs?
Yeah.
You know,
I thought Facebook's supposed to like prevent that from happening, but it goes on.
But there's a lot of people that do that, right?
Yeah, well, yeah.
Why don't we come up with a platform? Wait a minute. How come nobody's come up with this? We have a pet book. And it's a natural, you know, we're going to get a ton of advertising dollars in, right?
For cat food.
Yeah. So, okay, well, I'll take it. But I don't care what it's for. How come nobody's come up with this yet?
I don't know. Maybe we should think about doing it.
How hard could it be?
It can't be that hard.
We have all the models to work with. I mean, the only problem is that, you know, we do know the owners will post their dogs, cats, birds, fish. I mean, we're open to all particular pets. We don't care if it's an anaconda, right? We don't care. I'm going to write this down.
Write it down. We're going to have to implement it soon. Since we're giving it away, the idea away, but we're going
to
do it.
By the way, we have copyright on this already, just to let you know, everybody, anybody that is thinking about stealing our idea, and probably somebody's going to be sending in a note shortly that this already exists. It's called, you know, it's called a MySpace pet or something, you know? All right, let's talk about...
it's not well marketed, so no, we have that edge.
It's correct. That is correct. All right, let's... And you know what we'll do is we'll just build it to sell it to Facebook. That's what we'll do.
Well, that would be pleasant.
Yeah.
They pay top dollar.
Mm-hmm. Barkbook. Okay. China. Still slowing. Even with six different stimulus measures unleashed over the last, you know, number of months. Yeah. We saw that last night, the unofficial, quote unquote, which is, who knows if it's more accurate or not, purchasing managers index for manufacturing and services both declined. The manufacturing index PMI is now at 42.4. 50 is that magic number from contraction to expansion.
Right.
Non-manufacturing or services, which I'll be honest with you, that is what we here in the United States, we really live and die by because we're not as much of a manufacturing country anymore. But that dropped to 42.9 from 44. That's pretty ugly. That's very concerning.
You know, the Chinese form of capitalism is still kind of in its infancy, and they just did so well for so long that I don't think they ever really had any true experience with the business cycle.
Right. It was more of just dealing with the mass amount of things that were going on.
Yeah. So this could be a major turndown that they can't fix, and it's just going to get worse. Yeah, generally speaking, with the business cycle, the more you try to fool around with it, try to correct it, the worse it makes it.
Yeah, I don't see. I mean, it's a totally different situation than here. They have a lot more people over there. They make a lot less money on average. So it's the difference is quantity versus maybe quality comparatively. And, you know, there's one thing where you can make some tweaks. And on a very mature economy and on something that's reliable. And it's another thing entirely also when you have this large of an economy with this many people having a major shift maybe from one direction to the other because the boat kind of rocks much harder. So there's a lot of talk about this whole hard landing potential there. And we already know the real estate sector's in big trouble there. We already know that the slowdown is bleeding. And they've done all sorts of things to try to increase lending, prop up the stock market, you know, all the things that they're doing. But it seems that they also have things in place that are not intentionally, but are also slowing their economy.
Hmm.
Now, when they, you know, when China sneezes, Asian countries get a flu or get pneumonia, really. Over here, we get the cold. You know, it's going to be, and again, that's one of the other headwinds that is really concerning that it seems that aside from Nike, who, by the way, last week after their recent earnings were pretty good and things said China was fine, last week out of the blue, they come in with a $12 billion buyback program.
Yeah, I saw that.
Enormous. Just enormous. That's a lot of sneakers. And they come in with, at the same time, in the same breath, an increase of their dividend and a stock split. That was good.
Yeah, they're definitely trying to prop up something.
Yeah. And it could be, you know, that I've talked to a lot of colleagues about this, and they're all pretty amazed that the only thing that Nike can do with all that money is buy their own stock. It's the only thing that Nike seems to be able to say is, oh, this is the great investment. I mean, it's a big money.
I don't know why they don't buy some of the other companies out.
I don't know.
Or Reebok is probably a buy candidate. I assume. I think they're traded. Under Armour, whatever it's called. Well,
that would be big. That's a pretty big price for that one. But that would be, there's a lot of competition there, a lot of overlap. But, I mean, there is Skechers.
Skechers is good. Yeah, Skechers perfect.
You know?
Or for all practical, what about Crocs?
Or Finish Line. or, you know, any of the shoe companies for distribution.
Yeah. The stores.
Foot Locker, for that matter. They have a lot of that. But so anyway, I'm not sure what the point was of how I...
Maybe they know that the sector sucks.
For the most part, I mean, shoes aren't doing as well. Nike does stand out as one of the lone stars that are doing very well on all points, particularly in China, which everybody was very concerned with before the earnings a couple of weeks back or 3 weeks back. They were going to come in with a really soft China. They said, nope, China's better than ever. China clearly is buying smartphones and they're buying sneakers.
So a guy came, a friend of mine who floats around the world taking videos, came in from China and brought in the latest edition of the Apple phone, mm-hmm. the iPhone 6S, uh-huh. the Chinese version.
Oh.
And $35.
$35?
Yeah. $35. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't know. It's obviously a counterfeit, but mm-hmm. you can't tell the difference.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you gave it to somebody, I've tested on a few people. I said, this is kind of light, but it looks exactly the same. If you're at a bar and you have to have an iPhone because you can't pick up girls without one, I'm told by the millennials, you have one. It looks just like when the icons look the same. Everything looks the same. It's got the logo, boots with an Apple logo. It's fantastic.
But $35. But it's Android.
Dual SIM.
Really?
The back comes off, by the way.
Hmm.
And, yeah.
And it's unlocked?
It's unlocked. Dual SIMs. Back comes off. Battery comes out if you want to swap batteries. Looks like an iPhone. It doesn't have, obviously, the same features. The cameras and stuff are different. And $35. And he's wondering why. He says they still sell the regular iPhone 6S like hotcakes in China. And he can't figure out why at all, because it's like it's a better phone than this thing, but he says this thing gets better battery life.
Well, because it has probably a slower processor, probably doesn't have all the features. It probably runs on Android.
Yes,
so you have that going for it. But will any of the US-based carriers just activate it?
Oh yeah,
it's not a problem.
No, you just stick a SIM in there, and boom, it works on a GSM network.
Wow, for $35.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty good.
He also brought two other phones in that are, including the cheapest Android phone you can buy in China, which is $17. And it's a smartphone. And then there's another one that he liked. It's a $25 phone that was pretty nice. It's nice. It's got a nice size and it's pretty cool. Called a Nika something or other. Nicotine, or I can't remember the name.
Nicorette. What's this new one? The 1x2 or the. Have you heard of this new phone?
No.
It's a 1x2 phone. I think that's what it's called. I think I got it a little wrong. Nope. Here, showing yourself a 1x2 phone. Alibaba, number 1x2 phone. No, that's different.
So there's a lot of these phones being made over there. I guess it's astonishing to me that there'd be so many phone companies actually making phones. But there are. And of course, you can buy the parts are parts, and they just
it's a 2X1. That's what it is, a 2X1.
2X1.
2X1 smartphone here. It's a Samsung, I guess. Smartphone 2X1. It's all in Spanish, though. I don't know. I got to look what that is. I heard something about that. It was pretty cool. Anyway, you have to have the iPhone. You have to look cool. You have to make sure you have that swiping ability and all that other stuff. And I guess it's a status symbol not only here but over there too. That's one of the big things.
Yeah, it works.
Maybe somebody, if they find out that you don't have an actual iPhone, somehow they pick it up. Oh, can I borrow your phone? Hey, I'm not doing business with you, buddy. Could be. They're big into status over there in China.
I will say this, that I have not had anyone, maybe once in the last 10 years, ask to borrow my phone to make a call.
I get a little weirded out by that.
It doesn't bother me, because I've actually asked people to borrow their phone when I had a dead phone on me or whatever. But, if they grab your phone and dial the number, then the building blows up and then give you the phone back and run. I think that would be disconcerting.
But how do you feel when somebody sits down at your computer and starts using your computer? Any problem there?
Luckily, I have other computer. I actually, in my house, I have three computers that are always active, and one of them is a stand-up computer. And if somebody wants to use a computer, I say, I point to the other two. They're not using mine.
Right. So I'm saying the iPhone or your smartphone really is your computer. And probably one of the reasons you don't want them using your computer is because you have all sorts of, once you open it up to them, they can start clicking around.
They could.
Right. So same thing with an iPhone. You can click around to your contacts, maybe your notes, your emails, who knows? Or they're going to start seeing your text messages start flashing up in your screen.
That could happen.
Yeah, well, that's why I don't like it.
Well,
I don't like it.
Carry an extra phone with you.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about some interesting things that happened in the market. Well, first of all, I don't know if you've been following this saga, but do you remember that guy, Martin Shkreli? He was the guy who was the first guy that started this process that boosted the stock, the drug price of that drug.
Yeah, the creepy guy.
Right. So this guy went in to essentially a dying company, a company that was in the process of liquidating and shutting down. It was a biotech company, and the stock was at, well, let's call it about a buck, buck and a half. So he goes in there last week, and out of nowhere, for no reason, they have two drugs that are not approved yet. They're in the pipeline. They're in the process. And again, they didn't have enough money to continue on with the research, with the process of getting the drugs through the process, et cetera. He buys 1.2 million shares of the company at about a buck and buck and change per share. News comes out. Stock flies. It's up like 600% the next day. So that's not that bad, you know, from a dollar.
Yeah, I think I could live with that.
Yeah, dollar to 600, you know, $6. That's a pretty good deal right there, right? But that's not the end of the story. So there was, which I can't really understand. There was just a buttload of short sellers on this. Now, first of all, who's shorting a stock less than $2? I don't know. Secondly, I can understand how maybe they were shorting it because of like, well, all the news is clear. The company is shutting down. It's going to go bankrupt. So from $2 to zero, that's $2. I'll take that. Right? So there was no question about there was really no other news out. They were shutting down. That was it. So when he comes in, and why does he do this? Well, he does it because maybe he's going to revive the company, start putting money into the company, put it under his umbrella of various biotechs, etc., fund the company so that maybe they can continue on with their research and through the process of maybe getting some of these, you know, one or two of these drugs approved that they have of the two, and maybe start making some money. It could be very good for them. All right. We agree with that. Take a look at this.
Usually not so much in the drug business because people keep an eye on all these tests, and this probably was not promising. So Merck didn't do it but okay. In theory, everything you say is correct.
Yeah. Take a look at the chart. One KBIO. See that? KBIO.
What's the symbol?
It's on the. I sent it to you. It's in the.
Oh, I thought you sent something. Yeah. Okay. Let me look. Was it the clinical trials link or where?
Nope. It's in the bottom on the attachments.
Oh, the chart. Okay. Ah.
There you go. I'll put all of these charts, by the way, on the show notes for dhunplugged.com, this particular episode, number 293. And you can see all these. But check this out. The stock went from about a buck and change and vaulted higher over the last 4 or 5 days? Stock topped out yesterday at 42. From a dollar, like, on the 18th to 42 4 days later.
Yeah.
So stock was halted a few times. Things were going crazy. I think from the bottom to the top there, the stock was up something like 6,000%, 5,000%, something like that. But if you take when I snapshotted this midday, by the way, this was at 36. Now, I tried to get some short positions on this when it was going at about 41, 42. Right there, we saw some clear resistance, and actually yesterday the stock was halted and it came down about 15% after that, and it went right back up, closed right about 40. Today it opens up, kind of pops back up, comes down, tried again to get shorts, no borrows available. Well, at the end of the day, the stock ended up at, it closed today. You see, this is, I don't know, does it say what time this was? It doesn't say what time it was. This was probably at about 1:30 or 2 o'clock today, or one, maybe 1 o'clock. It was at 36. Closed at about 19.
Nice. Of course, there was no way of shorting it.
I mean, I couldn't get shorts. I'm sure you could figure out a borrow maybe if you had some other, you know, different brokers will have different things, but I didn't, there was no shares I could find anywhere. So we'll see what happens with this, but kind of a crazy move for a stock by all standards. And it's probably, I don't know anybody. I talked to a couple of people that specialize in the biotech area, and they had no idea why it would take such a significant move higher.
Hmm.
I mean, if you have a two, if you're short at two, if you're short at five, by the time it gets to 10, aren't you like, all right, I'm done? You're not going to wait till 30.
You would, yeah. No, that's kind of the myth of the whole, you know, how much money you could have made. Most people, you know, if it goes from 2 to 10, you're out.
Now, there was a story.
Probably in a hurry.
There was a story about, I got to find the story. There's a story about a guy who had a bunch of this KBio. Here it is right here. There was a guy who had this KBio, this stock. He was short, okay? He was short the stock. And let me see what this is. I'm trying to find where this is. Is this not the one? Oh, yeah. So here it is. So this guy was short the stock. This guy, what's his name? Joe Campbell. He decided to take $35,000 and short KBio, okay, last week or the week before.
At two or at what?
It was about two, yeah. Okay. He woke up the next day and he owed E-Trade $106,000. Okay.
Oops.
So what, first of all, idiot. So what does he do? He goes to GoFundMe.com and he creates a crowdfunding campaign to cover the $106,000 margin call.
Wow.
How about
what
that
nerve?
Yeah, exactly. Now, I don't know if he closed out of this or whatever his deal was. He said he's going to, listen, I'm going to sell my wife's 401k. I'm going to liquidate all of my positions and all that because I need to kind of pay this thing off, of course. Okay. And the actual, he provided a very, very long letter, and he showed his actual E-Trade account screenshot, which shows a total long-term gains of zero in this account, a total short-term gain or loss, $144,000. And commissions and fees of $246. Today's realized gains in that one account, again, was $140,000. I guess they probably closed him out. But can you believe? I think he raised a few thousand dollars from people. But most people were pretty pissed off. Like, are you out of your mind? Let's see. I'm going to go to the GoFundMe website and find out. I mean, you know, I assume he could have mocked this all up and be, you know, totally... just doing this to rip people off on the GoFundMe. I don't really know, but supposedly he was showing all this information. Man, you can't seemingly get the GoFundMe account. Not coming up so good. Because you got to get through all the advertising first is the big problem. Now we'll see if that comes up. Yeah, it's not coming up. I don't know what the deal is there. Just making loops. And I don't feel like letting that. There we go. Number one for crowdfunding. What do you think about this whole GoFundMe thing, though? I mean, is that something legit?
Well, I mean, it's a public begging platform.
He actually,
it's
you
legit.
Know what?
I mean, you can get money.
He pulled it. He pulled. They pulled the GoFundMe. Pulled it.
Oh, well,
maybe it wasn't legit. Kind of funny, but that's the problem when you short a stock with that kind of money. If that ever happens, you know, the fact is that you could lose an unlimited amount of money when you short. You got to be careful.
Yes.
I was thinking about
especially when the stock skyrockets.
Yeah. I was thinking about the dollar, the US dollar, and I was wondering, is it possible that maybe there's a buy the rumor, sell the news situation that will be brewing here where we buy the dollar on the rumor that the Fed is going to increase in December and sell the dollar when the news actually hits or close to the news date? As it's moved so well up, I mean, it's often the case.
This is one of your ideas that you like to toy with.
Mm-hmm. And I guess that I listed a few companies here that would benefit. In fact, as we saw today, the dollar came down a little bit, nothing major, but would benefit from a dollar moving lower. And actually, you probably see a massive short squeeze in some of these companies. So you got material companies like U.S. Steel, Freeport MacMoran, which I actually bought some Freeport MacMoran today. Commodities like gold, silver, oil. Oil-related like Apache or Helmerich & Payne or Transocean, ExxonMobil. Just a little thought there that maybe if the dollar has... There's so many people that have been on that side of the trade. You know, this whole long dollar, short yen, short euro trade or short, short anything.
Well, but we got the dollar sitting at $1.0670.
Yeah, it moved up pretty good tonight. I'm not sure what's going on.
122 for the yen, which is... The pound is down a bit to $1.51. Gold is down to 1078. Mm-hmm. Actually went up a little bit today. Oil is 42. I don't know. There's so many. This is something that has not yet to be solved to my satisfaction. The interplay between these commodities and the dollar and the yen and the euro.
Yeah. And it's also demand driven. A lot of things I'm talking about are demand driven, like the material companies and commodities. But with many of these companies shuttering their various operations in different areas, you know, one of these days you're going to see that there's going to be potentially the demand, while it may be diminished, the supply will also be severely cut for some of these. So anyway, keep those on your watch list. So Freeport was triple bottom here that you could pretty much make out in about the $8.780 range. Which again is a very significant drop from where it was.
Yes. Significant. I guess a good long term investment.
Well, I think I'm going to add this to the game, but we'll talk about that in a moment. Canada only accepting whole families, lone women or children in its mass resettlement of Syrian refugees, while unaccompanied men considered a security risk are going to be turned away. So you can only have an entire family come into Canada, which I'm not sure if that means the extended family.
Well, it seems to me that you're standing in line to get in there and you're just a single mom with her kid and you some guy, you'd probably just get married immediately.
Right there.
Yeah, we're a family.
Mm-hmm. So there'll be a lot of marriages going on other borders.
Why even do the marriage? Just say you are a family. You can fake. I mean, they don't have any records.
So just say, really, you may have different last names. Let's say, whoa, just never changed it?
You can, lie about your life. I don't know. You say, well, you haven't changed the names yet. Well, it's not a tradition. I mean, there's a million things. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of fraud.
Yeah, well, naturally. If they're trying to get in, they're going to get in.
Right.
You know? There was a lot of... recently, there's been a bunch of news about E. coli. Now, I was remembering back, you remember the big E. coli in the 90s with Jack in the Box?
Right.
Yeah, so that was kind of, and what happened to the stock? Stock back from the 90s to now went from like, I don't know, I think it was $10 to $70 or something like that. You know, we have a very short memory. We just recently saw that Chipotle had a secondary outbreak. Stock was down like 12% to a multi-year low on that because they missed earnings. There was an E. coli breakout. Then there was another E. coli breakout. Right. Now we have E. coli being announced that health investigators confirm a handful of cases of E. coli been linked with chicken salad, whole thing, sold at Costco.
Chicken salad?
Yes, chicken salad. I guess that pre-made chicken salad, which is yuck. Cases have turned up in four western states, Colorado, Montana, Utah, and Washington.
Huh.
So I don't know if it's...
Well, nobody here buys chicken salad from Costco. I don't know why anyone would buy chicken salad.
Not a big seller. Or the tuna salad, the egg salad.
Chicken salad.
Yeah. What about, you know what's really gross? This is definitely, I think, more disgusting than chicken salad. Chicken salad, I mean, a good chicken salad, nothing wrong with a good chicken salad. But prepackaged chicken salads with all the mayo and all the preservatives and the pickles, whatever. Ham salad. Oh.
Oh, I'm in total agreement.
Oh, what is that? It doesn't even look right.
No, it doesn't sound right either if you think about it.
No, it's terrible.
Ham salad. Ugh.
Yeah. I'll have three ham salad sandwiches, please, with the pickles and some ketchup on it.
Yeah.
Now, here's something you don't see very often. A Memphis Navy... when you read this one? This is terrible. You see this one halfway down about the Memphis guy?
You wanna read
the Memphis guy. Can you see that halfway down?
Let me see.
You take this
one. Oh, let me read. Yeah, these are guys. That's because.
Well, can you read it to everybody and tell them what's going on?
Well, a lot of people are souping up these little vape devices.
Right.
And they're putting in like really high power so you can get this huge amount of vapor.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look online, you go, you look up mods on YouTube, put vaporizer or vapor mod, M-O-D. And you'll see these guys, and they have these, they got like a car battery on these things, and they breathe in, and when they breathe out the smoke, it fills the room. Have you ever seen this?
Yeah, oh no, I've seen it many times.
Yeah. So I guess sometimes these things are blowing up on some of these guys.
Yeah, so a Memphis native is recovering from injuries to his neck and face after an electronic cigarette exploded on Friday. This guy, this 29-year-old fellow, is in critical condition, which, I mean, this must have been something. Was in the hospital because not only did the e-cigarette, obviously this modded thing, explode, but it broke his neck, which is pretty unbelievable. His teeth were knocked out and he had facial fractures.
Yeah, and all his teeth were blown out, like you said.
I mean, I'm just saying, is it possible that maybe, you know, somebody kicked the crap out of him? He says, well, Richard Pryor kind of thing. I mean, I don't want to admit, you know. Kind of a crazy story.
It's in Colorado Springs. It was in Florida. I think that'd be more likely.
Ah, thanks. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's look at stocks. For the first time, after the company split its operations, although it's still doing a blended earnings report, Hewlett Packard reported earnings today after the close. And wouldn't you know it, the enterprise section, which is the one that has all the good business, did just fine. And the split on the old Hewlett Packard side did lousy. The stock was down 7% after hours on the HPQ versus the HPE. One of the biggest drags on their business, printers.
Yeah.
Down double digits year over year.
How can that even be? They're the ones who almost pioneered both the laser jet.
I thought that was Xerox.
No, I believe it was HP. Well, Xerox... Well, let me think about this. I'm thinking about the desktop versions.
I'm going to look it up as you
Xerox
talk.
Had these big printers, yes, and that they invented the Xerox printer, and the laser jet is similar technology. Well, but let's skip that.
Okay.
They definitely were the first to market with inkjets.
Mm-hmm.
They used to have this little piece of crap. It's very small, but it was an inkjet printer. I remember having one. It was like in the late 70s or something, and they kind of... You're very competitive in the inkjet market for a very long time until Epson, I guess, just overwhelmed them. That's the only thing I can think of. I don't see how they can lose so much money on inkjet printers.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, that's all that's out there these days. I mean, for the most part. Let's see. Now, first of all, just to get to the point, this guy named Gary Starkweather, he worked for Xerox in the 1960s. And they had a dominant position in the photocopier market. In 69, he had the idea of using a laser beam to draw an image that was copied directly onto the copier drum. So right. that was them. That was starting in the 60s. Inkjet printing. It was starting in the 70s. Inkjet printers could be reproduced digital signals, mainly by Epson, Hewlett-Packard, and Canon. Didn't say really who was the first.
Who was the last?
Canon?
Oh, Canon, yeah.
And then...
those three stayed in competition for a very long time.
Mm-hmm. I don't know where it says that
I think a lot of it had to do with the technology. The Epson has a, electrostatic mechanism, and both Canon and HP, I believe, boiled the ink.
Mm.
And it was a different...
But I agree with you, by the way, that Hewlett-Packard was one that really... That was the one, that had the market
for, yeah,
especially for office. So just goes to show you, if you're not, and you can't say, unfortunately for Hewlett-Packard, they can't be like, well, we're shifting all of our printing to the cloud. That's just not going to happen.
I think what's funny is spinning off this other company, which is a loser, because in the olden days, wouldn't you just, you've got a line of products that aren't making any money, you just cancel the line of products.
The problem
is package it up and sell it to the public.
Right. It just draws too much Well, yes, you do these days. It doesn't matter if you have dog shit, you sell it to the public.
Yeah.
You know?
For public.
Exactly. But there's still a lot of revenue coming from the company. I mean, it's just not profitable. They're making money, but they're just not making any net money.
Right.
All right, let's take a look.
Never will.
Take a look at two other things here before we get to these stocks, which I know everybody really enjoys. And by the way, you fixed a lot of the problems. Not there wasn't a lot of problems. We fixed the issue. It seems that we were having a problem with Hotmail. Anybody that had Hotmail accounts, we were having all sorts of problems with. If they signed up to, you know, a freebie to look at the stocks and all that, and they were having problems with the confirmation, but we fixed that. And
yeah, I'm actually stunned that anyone has a Hotmail account.
Well, that was, but you know, it was interesting because I started seeing these emails from people come in saying, hey, I'm having a problem with confirming my account and all that. So, okay. And two or three came in. The fourth one, I'm like, what's the same about these accounts? They're all Hotmail. Let's take a look, very quick look at market structure. One of the things that I've been talking about is that, not that there's a crash on the horizon, nothing like that right now, but, you know, who knows? But the market structure is something that's been very concerning to me of late. It's kind of like a iced over pond where you kind of looks like everything is good, but you step in the center and boom, nothing underneath to hold you.
Right.
The market structure, I put a attached a 52-week high and low. It's a bar chart. It's a horizontal bar chart. And what we did was we took a look at the count of the S&P 500 stocks and their distance from their 52-week highs. And we broke it down by stocks that were down more than 20% from their 52-week high, stocks that were down from 15 to 20%, 10 to 15%, 7 to 10, and those that had 3% loss or better. In other words, they were only down maximum 3% or they could have been positive. Now, what's really interesting about this is that when you look at the S&P 500, it's pretty much flat on the year, a little up, a little down, you know, depending on the day. And out of the S&P 500, the overwhelming majority of stocks in this chart that we did are down more than 20% from their high, 156 stocks. You see that?
Yeah.
Now, if you add in the stocks that are down between 15 and 20%, there's another 51. Between 10 and 15, there's 76. Between 7 and 10, 52. But let's just stay on the first three, where stocks are down at least 15%. So we're talking about 277 stocks. So that right now is more than half. Now, when you add in stocks that are down, you know, somewhere around 10% or so, you have to add
283.
In,
yeah, go on.
And exactly, 300 stocks. I mean, it's only 83 stocks that are better than 3% or down 3% or positive for the year. That's pretty shocking.
Well, that tells you that we're being bamboozled by some of these indexes.
Right, because the index on the S&P 500...
The index would indicate everything's peachy.
Yep, exactly. And that's why, by the way, you know, for the most part, when these big block investors come in and their performance is tied to a particular index, they'll try to push that so they can go in there and they can buy the stocks that have that greatest weight in the index, which is, in this case, the largest capitalization stocks, the Apples, Microsofts, Google, Facebook. Those stocks, which are doing well this year, generally, most of them are doing well, but they haven't really come in as much. But they're clearly pulling the rest of the load with them. And then when you look at things like the differential between the equal weighted and the capitalization weighted index, it's about a 3.5% differential. So if you take the average stock and take the S&P on an average basis, it's down about 1.5 to 2%, whereas the cap weighted is up 1%. So that's where the capitalization really is pulling ahead, and why it's kind of like the 1%, you know, the 1% of the income and the inequality, where
right,
1% or 2%, it's the same thing here. These companies have all the money. So kind of interesting to take a look at. So let's take a look at our stocks. Why don't we? You can, of course, find this on dhunplugged.com. It's a quick sign up to get free access. And we'll see a live ticking spreadsheet of our stocks that we pick. We come up with some ideas that work and sometimes don't. We have certain rules in terms of sell stops unless we put those down and override those. And we follow those. And this is not an offer to buy or sell any security. It is just a simple game that we play, not a recommendation. If you do choose to invest in any of these, please note that stock investing is very aggressive and you lose a lot of money or all your money. And go to professional financial advice. One more thing, any of the stocks that are either owned by myself, John C. Dvorak, our Horowitz Company clients will be noted on this as well. So I got a couple of stocks. You want me to go first? You want to go first?
I have one, but you can go first. Because right, so, mine is kind of like yours.
Okay, so we have pretty much the list hasn't really moved very much. A couple things are down a few percent. Really the same things that are playing out nicely. The Tata hasn't moved very much. Best Buy is up 8.5% on that short. IBM's flat, doesn't seem to ever want to move when we enter the short. That was John's pick. New Mountain Finance, TracOn, down a little bit, up a little bit. I got stopped out of Sun Edison. I'm so bummed about it. I needed a much wider stop. I think it came down to, I don't know, $2.50 or something like that. Now today it finished up at $4, over $4.
Oh, wow.
SolarCity is doing very well. That was your pick last week.
Went long. Way up over 7% already.
It's beautiful. And so is Kinder Morgan, up 4% since last week. Now I had two. I mentioned Freeport MacMoran. There was a triple bottom on that. This stock has been extremely volatile to the downside. We can see it hitting 780 a few times, bouncing off, coming back up. It's all about copper. It's all about demand. But the tendency right now has been that we're seeing stocks that have been just obliterated and have big short interest being picked up, and then they move pretty good. I mean, even though Sun Edison was down so much, it was up 40% today. Now, one that I have that is kind of an interesting story, BioMarin Pharmaceuticals. This company is going to have a very high probability, although this market's crazy, but generally speaking, it's going to be a problem when it opens. It's halted. It's been halted all day. The company and another company called Sarepta Therapeutics they went to the FDA. They were looking at a drug for Duchenne muscular dystrophy. And they had a particular drug that did a certain thing to inhibit a particular part of the, DNA sequence and all that to help. It's a very debilitating, horrible disease. Affects, I think, something like 1 out of every 3,500 people or so. The company has revenue. It's still unprofitable. This is supposed to be a pretty big hit. And the company has about $900 million revenue. Operating cash flow is a negative $200 million. Cash in the bank, about $600 million. Very high or total institutional ownership. The institutions love this. I compare this kind of what happened with Clovis recently, which kind of lost its bid for a drug. It was down 70%. This company has a better pipeline. This company does have revenue, even though they are bleeding money. Okay, I put a chart with this, which again I'll have on the site, and I'm kind of was a little struggling at what price to buy this because I don't know where it's going to open, but I don't think it's going to open up in good shape. So there's a couple of different points here that I identified on the chart, going back to 08 on the weekly chart of BioMarin. 3660, which has some decent support, closed at 97.80, by the way, yesterday or the day before. And 54.35, give or take a couple of pennies, is another point. Now, if it comes down to 54, that means it was at about 155, 160 recently, in the middle part of 2015. That would be a pretty big drop overall. 36 would be another 70% drop from, or 65% drop from where they closed at the last trade. So I've been struggling whether I want to put my order down at 36.60. I'm going to put a limit order in, or 54.35, not knowing where it's going to open if it opens up and just, cracks down. So 36.60 is a much better level. I just wonder if it's ever going to get there.
Well,
if I go to 54 and then it keeps on going lower, I get stopped out. Follow me?
Yeah.
So I'm still not totally, absolutely. The aggressive part of me says, let's try to pick it up at 54. The bottom picker would like to pick it up at 36. So I think I'm going with 54.30 with a 20% stop.
Okay.
I don't want to miss it. That would be about a 40% drop, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to buy this at, I think I put this down on, I have a $54 buy limit and 20% stop from the price. Now, let me just tell you what happens. If the stock opens immediately, let's just say, at, I'll just pick a number, 40. Well, we're going to be in at 40, because that's what happens on the open. That's how the game, this is how we always do this. If it opens at 60, I have to wait for it to come down to 54 before it's bought.
Okay.
Okay. So if it's below 54 on the open, it's bought at the open. If it's above 54 on the open, whenever it opens up, have to wait till it gets to 54.
That's a buy limit.
Yeah, buy limit.
Okay.
All right.
Well,
you're up.
You're all jacked up about this.
Wow. I just know it's going to be pretty crazy. I mean, I know that.
I saw an insider thing going on that I just couldn't resist. This chairman of the board of SCCO, it's a copper company.
Mm-hmm. You've had that before.
Is one of those guys you look at and you say, this guy seems to be, he has a good sense of things. He was selling this stock, his own stock, until January of 2011. And he was selling it in 48. There's a bunch of sales that just went on from 20. I don't know when it, how far it goes back, but 20 through 2010 through 2011. He was selling. Then he stopped all action until 2014 when he started buying the stock.
Mm-hmm.
And he is buying, at first he got it at 27, and he kept buying at 31, 32, 32, 31, 30, lots of stock. He went from having an ownership of 114,000 shares
mm-hmm.
to 2.8 million shares.
Wow.
All on the buy side since that January 2011, when he was really didn't have much of it. And so I'm thinking, this guy seems to be onto something, and he's the chairman of the board, and I'm in, SCCO.
Yeah, this is the copper company. And obviously, this is like, as you mentioned earlier, it's like the Freeport discussion. Yeah. And this, both charts look awful.
Right. But this one looks less awful to me.
All right, so you got the CEO buying. CEO.
And it's the CEO, or the chairman of the board, not the CEO.
Okay, chairman.
Chairman of the board, the old fart.
Uh-huh.
Going crazy. Right. And I have to say, this guy probably has a clue.
Okay, well, we'll stick with that then. What else you got?
That's all I got.
That's all you got.
I looked at here and there. I couldn't find anything.
Mm. All right. Well. We are coming to a close of 2015. Obviously, we've had a pretty good year in terms of these stocks. If you want to track these, of course, go over to dhunplug.com. There's a little button somewhere on that says, check out the weekly stock picks. And you can check those out and, of course, follow along with us. And what's going on there. I have a, we're working on in the back end, remember how we did the game where we awarded prizes each week to someone who was closest to the pin? Well, we're working on something like that again, still different. This time it's going to be a little bit more automated, and it's going to be a kind of a stock picking game, and it should be a lot of fun. Well, once we get that, and we got the developers working on this, once we get that done, you'll be able to track everything online, who's closest and best pick on a particular name, et cetera. We'll give you all the rules and tell you what to do so you can play along with us in terms of this whole game that we play, similar to that, but with some stock picks. Anyway, you can follow John C. Dvorak over on Twitter at TheRealDvorak and myself, Andrew Horowitz. You can also listen to the fantastic duo of Adam Curry and John C. Dvorak at the No Agenda Show, which you could find, you could live stream it. Actually, you stream it live each and every show, right?
Yes, we do, except this coming Thanksgiving. Of course, we have a clip show, which is more than a clip show. Somebody put it together for us. It's all of our humorous bits.
Oh.
2 hours worth of nothing but big laughs.
Big yucks. That's good. It's great how you get people to do that stuff for you guys.
Yeah. Yeah, we have We are open source. We try to keep volunteerism in high regard, and we use it because people like it. It makes it more of a community.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, you could follow that on twice a week, Thursdays and Sundays.
Right. You can listen. Fresh show on Sunday.
Yep. And so you can listen to that live and hear all the great stuff that goes on there. And I think the big word for that show is deconstruction.
Yes. Deconstructions are our word, our code,
exactly
what we do. Tear exactly. Stuff apart.
Yep. And of course, you can listen to The Disciplined Investor each and every week. Make sure to tell your friends about it too, so we can kind of get in everybody's ear and spread the love, the news, the worldly wisdom that we bring to you each and every week on Tuesday night here at DH Unplugged. So,
yes, insight of some sort.
Of some sort. If nothing else, you learned about Chinese restaurants today.
Yeah, it was news to me.
Yeah. And I want our listeners to go out there and make some calls for us. Just randomly call a Chinese restaurant and say, excuse me, what day of the year are you closed? Yeah. And report back. We'll see what happens. All right, I'll see you next week.
Okay, sounds good.
Have a great Thanksgiving, a wonderful turkey turducken / apple pie, whatever
you're having. We're having a small heritage bird.
Oh, okay. I told my wife not to make
a Narragansett turkey.
Oh, is that right? What's the difference? Less fatty or more plump?
Well, they're all different. There's a bunch of breeds. Turkey is not just one type of bird. There's a bunch of them.
Mm.
And the Narragansett is mostly dark meat. It's got doesn't have a big breast. They're kind of small. And they tend to, these heritage birds taste a lot more like pheasant. And they don't stink to high heaven like these commercial turkeys that smell like, turkey.
Now, I do like turkey salad next day.
Turkey salad?
Yeah
just don't buy it at Costco.
No, yeah, of course not. All right, I'll see you next week.
All right, bye.
Bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, 'cause I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket stands a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, 'cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.